gender identity is located in the mind, sexual orientation in the heart, and sex in the genitals.
The real underreported story is scapegoating against gays in all of sub-Saharan Africa. This is not unusual.
Judge Jeffrey Sutton began the majority opinion by basically saying same-sex marriage is so close to being the law of the land, it should be up to voters, not courts, to finish the job.
When the appeals courts below them disagree on something, that is the Supreme Court that has to settle the disagreement.
Sooner or later, yes, the question will come to the court.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Uganda revives its anti-LGBT agenda. Homophobia complicates Ebola phobia in Liberia. And a U.S. Circuit Court marriage equality ruling paves a supreme path. Those stories and a lot more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Chris Ann Eastwood.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the LGBT communities around the world for the week ending November 8, 2014. There were reports late this week about a new anti-LGBT bill in Uganda that may be even worse than the Anti-Homosexuality Act that was struck down on a legal technicality earlier this year. Human rights lawyer and activist Nicholas Opio told BuzzFeed that he had obtained a leaked copy of the proposal prepared by a committee of leading members of Uganda's ruling party and found it even more draconian. Private consensual adult gay sex is already a crime in Uganda. The original Anti-Homosexuality Act enhanced penalties for those acts and punished repeat offenders with up to life in prison. While echoing that provision, the new draft reportedly also makes promotion of LGBT rights a criminal offense. Opio said the new bill, called the Prohibition of Promotion of Unnatural Sexual Practices Bill of 2014, goes into much greater detail than the original measure about what activities are outlawed. And a new section makes it a crime to provide funding for purposes of promoting unnatural sexual practices, which would seem to outlaw financial support from groups that endorse LGBT rights. The fate of the new proposal in Parliament is uncertain. President Yoweri Museveni signed the original bill, but now worries about the loss of pro-LGBT countries' international trade and foreign aid if something similar passes. He may be acting behind the scenes to quash it. But soon after the Anti-Homosexuality Act was overturned in August, more than 100 MPs signed a petition calling for its immediate restoration.
A leading Nigerian activist who runs a clinic for gay men and transgender people has filed a lawsuit in the High Court asserting that he was arrested and detained without charge. Ifeanyi Arazuliki of the International Center on Advocacy for the Right to Health was arrested in Abuja while celebrating his birthday with friends, clinic staff, and other well-wishers. He said about a dozen officers stormed into his office and physically lifted him into a pickup truck. "I was told that they had come to arrest me on the instruction of the commissioner of police," he said, "but nothing further was volunteered." Orozaliki said he was only released after police officials realized that he would not pay the bribes they were soliciting. Nigeria strengthened its laws against same-gender sex earlier this year to include bans on marriage for lesbian and gay couples, criminalizing individuals or groups supporting LGBT rights, and even outlawing the expression of same-gender affection in public. Convictions can bring up to 14 years in prison.
8 Egyptian men were each sentenced this week to 3 years in prison for appearing in what the media sensationalized as a gay wedding video that went viral and sparked a national outcry. The conservative Muslim country has no law banning same-gender sex, so the men were convicted of debauchery and offending public morality, charges most often used against gay men. Amnesty International and a host of other global rights groups have called for the men's immediate release. Critics have denounced an explosion of highly publicized police actions targeting sexual minorities in the past few months. Some say that President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who replaced Islamist Mohamed Morsi, is trying to prove to Egyptians that his administration can be as conservative on social issues as his predecessor. As if to prove the point, late this week, the country's religious endowments minister condemned what he called the colonialist Zionist force, which sponsors and supports atheists and atheism and finances homosexuals and homosexuality. Mohammed Mukhtar Goma told an evangelical Arabic TV station, in a translation by the Middle East Media Research Institute, that we must confront atheism, nihilism, homosexuality, and moral depravity the same way we confront extremism and terrorism.
But elsewhere, Malaysia's Court of Appeal ruled on November 7th that an Islamic law that bans cross-dressing by Muslim men violates the nation's constitution and is degrading, oppressive, and inhumane because it fails to properly acknowledge transgender women. Under such laws, men dressing or acting as women can be punished by up to 3 years in prison, while some Malaysian states also ban women dressing as men. Astin Paiva, the lawyer for the three transgender women who challenged one of those states' cross-dressing bans in the Court of Appeal, called it a landmark and historic decision. He said that while the state law the trans women were charged with violating is still on the books and could lead to more prosecutions, you can now go to the High Court and challenge them. Nisha Ayub, a transgender activist, told Agence France-Presse that the ruling would encourage others to come out rather than being oppressed.
And trans woman Dr. Lydia Foy has settled her lawsuit against the Irish government. In a first for the country, Ireland's High Court ruled that the state's failure to legally recognize a trans person's affirmed gender is a violation of the European Convention on Human Rights Act of 2003. The now 67-year-old dentist has been fighting for 21 years to have the gender marker on her birth certificate changed to read female. Following the court's decision, the Irish government settled with Foy for 50,000 euros, equivalent to about $62,500. Foy also announced this week that the government had an expressed intention to introduce a gender recognition bill, which would recognize trans people in all dealings with the state, public bodies, and civil and commercial society. Legal recognition, she said, is vital to improving the daily lives of trans people in Ireland.
Judges in U.S. federal appeals courts have consistently struck down bans on civil marriage for same-gender couples in several states this year. But on November 6th, the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld those bans in Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee. By the following day, lawyers for the same-gender couple plaintiffs in all four states had jointly decided to forego asking the Sixth Circuit to reconsider the ruling with a larger panel of judges and instead go directly to the U.S. Supreme Court for a decision that would finally settle the issue nationally. Because a split now exists among the circuits on the question of whether it's unconstitutional for states to define civil marriage as exclusively heterosexual, the High Court is virtually compelled to consider the issue. A ruling could come as early as next June's LGBT Pride Month celebrations. We'll have more on this story later in the program.
Court battles over marriage equality continue in Missouri and Kansas, but there won't be a resolution of the issue in Florida until next year. In the latest blow to the ban in Missouri, which had already been overturned by a state judge, U.S. Federal District Court Judge Autry Smith on November 7th declared the ban to be a violation of the due process and equal protection provisions of the U.S. Constitution. And in response to yet another lawsuit, another state judge this week ordered the city of St. Louis to begin issuing marriage licenses to same-gender couples. A state court had already ordered Missouri to recognize the civil marriages of same-gender couples legally performed elsewhere. It's not yet clear if Attorney General Chris Coster, a Democrat, will appeal the district court ruling to the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which also has jurisdiction over Arkansas, Nebraska, and North and South Dakota.
In the latest skirmish in the equally fluid situation in Kansas, the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has denied the state's request for a stay of a district court judge's ruling earlier this week that overturned the ban on civil marriage in that state. Unless the Supreme Court steps in, Kansas lesbian and gay couples will begin marrying on November 11th or 12th. The state reportedly still plans to appeal the ruling by U.S. District Court Judge Daniel Crabtree, who said it was based on the precedent set by an earlier 10th Circuit ruling that struck down bans on civil marriage in Utah and Oklahoma. That also prompted a swift end to the bans in Colorado and Wyoming, which are also in the court's regional jurisdiction.
But U.S. District Court Judge Robert Hinkle has decided that his August ruling striking down Florida's ban will remain on hold until January 5th. Hinkle's stay on marriage in Florida means that Republican Governor Rick Scott and Attorney General Pam Bondi can continue their crusade against marriage equality in the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals.
In other news, Estonia has become the third country in the region to deny entry to popular Russian TV sitcom actor Ivan Oklobaystyn. The former priest, who notoriously called for gay people to be burned alive in ovens, had planned on performing in Tallinn later this month. Ukraine was the first to ban him as a threat to national security, and Latvia soon followed.
And Latvian Foreign Minister Edgar Rinkevich, who announced his country's ban on Oklobaystyn last week for what he called hate speech, came out on his official Twitter page this week, saying that he is proud to be gay. While same-gender relationships are banned by Latvia's constitution, Rinkevich vowed to fight for all partnerships to be recognized.
But finally, Russian authorities have taken down a 6-foot memorial statue of an interactive iPhone on a St. Petersburg college campus that paid tribute to late Apple founder Steve Jobs, saying it's now a violation of Russia's anti-gay propaganda law after current Apple CEO Tim Cook's widely hailed coming out last week. Officials said the statue had become a public call to sodomy.
That's News Wrap for the week ending November 8th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Chris Ann Eastwood.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
We review a homophobic fever in West Africa and a marriage equality warming in the U.S. later in the program. Change is always in the air, as queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason discovered.
Recently, I read 3 new books on transgender issues, including the story of a gender nonconforming child, Raising My Rainbow, Adventures in Raising a Fabulous Gender Creative Son, by Laurie Doran, 2013 Broadway Books. It's a funny yet serious first-person story of a mom doing her best in the raising of her gender creative son, who insists on wearing a tutu to dance class and has to be talked out of knotting his soccer shirt at his hip. Laurie is already ahead of the game. Her brother is gay, and she has long been a member of PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, which she describes as the most supportive support group that I've ever seen. It's good for the soul. It's what church should feel like. Doran covers important issues that a family raising a gender-creative child, including parenting his gender-conforming older brother and confronting bullying issues that he faces as a result of his younger sibling. Ultimately, she and her husband work with her children's school, the ACLU, and her younger son's therapist, who warns that transgender children have the highest rate of suicide, to resolve the issue. The book has helpful sections in the back, including a list of resources, and a section titled 12 Things Every Gender Nonconforming Child Wants You to Know. Item number 2, if you're confused and can't quite tell if I'm a boy or a girl, just know that I am a person. Please treat me that way. On the other side of the equation is Stuck in the Middle with You, a memoir of parenting in 3 genders by Jennifer Finney Boylan. 2013 Crown. Boylan writes about her journey of fathering 2 sons with her wife, transitioning, and being a mother to her children. Particularly poignant is Boylan's struggle with her gender identity, her decision to tell her wife, and the couple's decision to stay together through and after her transition. Stuck in the Middle with You is also a writer's memoir that includes interviews on identity, parents, and parenting with many authors, including Augustin Burroughs and Edward Albee. Trans Bodies, Trans Selves, 2014 Oxford University Press, is a great resource book, a whopping 648 pages full of important information and lots of stories. Sections include sex and gender, with a simple line drawing including that gender identity is located in the mind, sexual orientation in the heart, and sex in the genitals. The issues are more complex, but the drawing is spot on. Other sections include disabilities and deaf culture, religion and spirituality, legal issues, general sexual and reproductive health, medical transition, mental health services and support, parenting, youth, aging, arts and culture, just to name a few. The volume ends with an afterword from the founders of the Boston Women's Health Collective, authors of Our Bodies, Ourselves. I expect that trans bodies, trans cells, will become a staple in the trans community, including non-trans family members and loved ones. And like Our Bodies, Ourselves, will become such an integral, helpful resource that we can't imagine living without it. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra!
Have you checked our website lately? For now playing information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to thiswayout.org.
LGBT people in the Ebola hotspots of West Africa are falling victim to a related plague of hate. MSNBC's Ronan Farrow consulted an expert on that equally contagious syndrome.
There are new reports of a blame game going on, especially in Liberia. And it's a blame game that is now pointing at gay men and women. In May, Archbishop Louis Ziegler of the Catholic Church of Liberia said, quote, one of the major transgressions against God for which he may be punishing Liberia is the act of homosexuality. That's according to local media reports. You told us this was the underreported story you wanted to hear more about. So we're bringing it to you now with someone who's followed it closely, Jay Michelson of the Daily Beast. He's been writing about this. Thank you so much, sir, for taking the time.
My pleasure.
So first of all, give us some context here. Why this public outcry against gays in Liberia?
So I think the real underreported story is scapegoating against gays in all of sub-Saharan Africa. Mm-hmm. This is not unusual. It's not unusual to blame the other, the foreigners or the gays or the West or something, for outbreaks of plagues and natural disasters. And this just plays right in. Liberia is not the only place in the region. Nigeria also terrible for LGBT people. And so I think this is part of a larger wave, some of which has actually been caused by Westerners traveling abroad, spreading a sort of hard right message around sexual minorities.
Why does religion in some of these places provide such fertile ground in particular for this kind of scapegoating?
Well, this should sound really familiar, blaming plagues on somebody, right? It's in the Bible, the 10 plagues in Egypt,
right.
Or we might remember when Pat Robertson blamed 9/11 on abortionists and gays and anyone else he felt like blaming. You know, what religion does is provide explanations for things, in part, and I think when there's a tragedy of this proportion, people are looking for any explanation, and they'd rather have a kind of a far-fetched explanation than none at all.
You mentioned, interestingly enough, this sort of being a phenomenon we are not totally unacquainted with in the United States. This particular trend of blaming gay men and women for the Ebola outbreak has also reached our shores. One Christian radio host, who shall remain nameless, making a very similar argument. What's at stake here? I mean, could we see that kind of philosophy spring up more here in the States?
Well, you never know what fear can do. I mean, there was just that case in Arizona where somebody had traveled to East Africa and they alerted the police, and the police went to their home, said, well, you've been to West Africa, not aware that I think it was Zambia. It's actually 2,500 miles away. So rationality clearly is not a break on the fear that's spreading around this disease. And I think it's easy for us to say, oh, that's Liberia or that's West Africa. That could never happen here. But things like this do happen here, and I wouldn't put anything past a group of really scared people.
And of course, one difference is here the conversation may happen. It's not something we condone. Hate speech is never a good thing. However, at least there isn't quite the preponderance of death threats, actual deaths. We know in these parts of sub-Saharan Africa that is something that's very real for these gay men and women.
Jay Michelson of the Daily Beast was a guest on MSNBC's Ronan Farrow Daily. so you don't want to miss a week of This Way Out's global news or great music by openly LGBT artists, hearing about a new movie even before the buzz begins, getting on-scene coverage of important news as it's happening, or queer historic sounds from our archives. The answer is a subscription to This Way Out. You can get our programs on great-sounding CDs delivered right into your mailbox and for less than a newspaper subscription. For easy how-to information, simply email tworadio@aol.com. Or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. The contrarian U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals broke with four other federal appeals courts on November 6th by upholding bans on civil marriage for lesbian and gay couples in the states of Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee. A day later, lawyers for the same-gender couple plaintiffs in all four states jointly decided to forego asking a larger panel of the Sixth Circuit to reconsider the three-judge panel's ruling and appeal directly to the U.S. Supreme Court. On her program the night of the ruling, MSNBC News anchor Rachel Maddow described the winding road a case must take to reach the nation's highest court.
In the federal court system, at the first level, there are trial courts, federal district courts all over the country where federal judges hear trials. They hear from witnesses. There's a jury, everything you'd expect from a normal trial. One level above that are courts that just hear appeals. At the circuit court level, they don't oversee trials like they do in the lower courts. They just hear appeals from other court decisions. When the appeals courts below them disagree on something, it is the Supreme Court that has to settle the disagreement. There's lots of different ways that constitutional law gets made, but a big part of it is just that there is this hierarchy of the courts. And over the last year or so, there have been rulings from a whole bunch of those circuit courts, those courts in the middle, right? A whole bunch of rulings that all said the same thing, that all said that same-sex marriage cannot be banned by the states. The Fourth Circuit, the Seventh Circuit, the Ninth Circuit, the Tenth Circuit Court, they all said the same thing about gay marriage. Well, tonight, for the first time, a circuit court has said the opposite. It's the Sixth Circuit Court that has jurisdiction over Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee. Today, that appeals court there, that circuit court, said that those states can ban gay marriage.
The language used is interesting.
YouTube reporter Christian Bryant.
Judge Jeffrey Sutton began the majority opinion by basically saying same-sex marriage is so close to being the law of the land, it should be up to voters, not courts, to finish the job. It said if the marriage debate is settled by the courts, it would perpetuate the idea that the heroes in these change events are judges and lawyers, and it would be better if the people, gay and straight alike, become the heroes of their own stories. That kind of reasoning seems a little unusual and was quickly picked up by critics. A New York Times editor said, "Who cares about the identity of the heroes of change events? Can most Americans name the lawyers or judges who decided Brown versus Board of Education?" The dissenting judge, Martha Daughtry, was even more harsh. She accused her fellow judges of sidestepping the issue, saying the ruling would make an engrossing TED Talk or possibly an introductory lecture in political philosophy. But as an appellate court decision, it wholly fails to grapple the relevant constitutional question. The Supreme Court has so far avoided a firm decision on same-sex marriage, which is why some proponents say the circuit court ruling could actually further the cause by finally settling the debate. The Human Rights Campaign, an LGBT rights group, said now, more than ever before, the Supreme Court of the United States must take up the issue and decide once and for all. If the case does go to the Supreme Court, there could be a decision by the end of next June. For Newsy, I'm Christian Bryant.
National Public Radio legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg dissected the court's rationale.
This is a question of who decides, and that in these cases, what we're left with is this, that the states had a rational basis, a reason. You might not like the reason, but it was a reasonable reason, so to speak. And that is that by creating a status, marriage, and subsidizing it with tax privileges and deductions, the states created an incentive for two people who procreated together to stay together for purposes of rearing offspring. That does not convict the states of irrationality, only of awareness of the biological realities of couples of the same sex and that they do not and who do not have children in the same way as opposite sex couples.
But Totenberg didn't see the ruling as overtly political.
This panel had two reasonably conservative judges, but good judges. Judge Jeffrey Sutton, who wrote this opinion, is a conservative Republican, and so is the other member of the majority here, and it's a Democratic appointee otherwise. But that doesn't tell us a whole lot.
Rachel Maddow thinks that the U.S. Supreme Court is now compelled by the dissenting Sixth Circuit ruling to settle the marriage equality question.
There's only one constitution, and a right either has to be a constitutional right or it's not. And the Supreme Court has been desperate to not have to decide this matter for the whole country. But now, with what happened tonight, they're probably going to have to, unless they can weasel out of it somehow.
Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg as much as said in mid-September that the High Court would have to consider the issue if there were split rulings among the circuit courts.
So far, the federal courts of appeals have answered the question the same way, holding unconstitutional the ban on same-sex marriage. There is a case now pending before the Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit. Now, if that court should disagree with the others, then there will be some urgency in the court taking the case. Sooner or later, yes, the question will come to the court. But the remarkable thing is how attitudes in this country have changed on that issue. And I attribute it to gay people ready to stand up and say who they are. When they did that, people looked around, and it was their next-door neighbor of whom they were very fond. It was their child's best friend, even their child. So people began to understand and realize their own prejudices on that matter. And I think it's the having people close to us say who they are that made the attitude change in this country.
If Justice Ginsburg is right about what the Supreme Court may now be forced to do, a ruling on U.S. marriage equality could be announced as soon as June Pride 2015. As we always say, stay tuned. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Chris Ann Eastwood, Janet Mason, and Sarah Sweeney contributed program material with thanks, as always, to Steve Pride. Errol Verse performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Listen online and join us on social media. The details are at thiswayout.org, along with mugshots of the crew, affiliate stations info, and news wrap transcripts. Email tworadio@aol.com. or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KRCC, Colorado Springs, Colorado, WOJB, Hayward, Wisconsin, CJLY, Nelson, Victoria, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.